All the world seems in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. Every Sunday you'll see my sweetheart and me as we poison the pigeons in the park. When they see us coming, the birdies all try and hide, but they still go for peanuts when coated with cyanide. The sun's shining bright, everything seems all right when we're poisoning pigeons in the park.
Oh, that is just so wrong, isn't it? That's Tom Lehrer with the song Poisoning Pigeons in the Park. Well, think about your city, if you live in a city. There's pigeons, there might be dogs, cats, birds, native animals. Well, there's an exhibition just starting at Sydney's Customs House, and it explores animals in the city and our relationship to them. And I should say I'm actually standing here in the studio with my hand on a gold-coated bat. We'll explain that in a moment. But the exhibition is called Something Else is Alive, Sydney and the Animal Instinct. And co-curator Glenn Barkley from the curator department is here in the studio. Hello, Glenn.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. So why animals in the city for an exhibition?
I think myself and Holly Williams, the co-curator on the exhibition, we were interested in the way that human beings think they're in control of their natural world, but far from it. And the way that animals exist in the city, sometimes quietly, and often they have this symbolic power that is goes back to sort of human impulses that I think go back thousands and thousands of years. So there's animals everywhere. There's birds, there's pigeons, obviously, there's rats everywhere, but there's also animals in the architecture too. And what sort of symbolic power do animals have, and how do you explore that in an exhibition was where we sort of started.
Well, there's animals in architecture, and not far from here, where we're talking at the ABC in Sydney, is Sydney University. And around the oldest bits of the university, there are gargoyles in the shape of kangaroos. There are all sorts of things when you look up. So how much have animals shaped the physical spaces of the Sydney, the actual architecture?
They're sort of everywhere. And funnily enough, when we started to talk to people about the exhibition, and talking about this thing about the symbolic power of animals, is people would just find them because there's a lot of the English crest everywhere, the unicorn and the lion, sort of on all of the older buildings in the city.
And then there's all those lucky lions around Chinatown.
Yeah, there are.
People's front yards.
Yeah. And then there's also the lucky pig outside the women's hospital on Macquarie Street.
Where people with its rubbed nose.
Rubbed nose. And I love that idea that here's this lucky pig that people go and touch for luck. I mean, hospitals can be such places of despair, but also of joy. And I think there's this really nice thing that to try and somehow connect ourselves to some deeper world, we go and rub a pig's nose.
But those examples are brass and concrete and sandstone. But the title of your exhibition is Something Else is Alive. Now, where does that come from?
It actually comes from a Ted Hughes poem called The Thought Fox, which Holly quite often says, can I come up with a title? And that is one of my favourite poems. I love Ted Hughes is talking about the creative act and sitting alone. I think the first lines are something like staring at the page. I imagine this midnight moments forest, something else is alive beside the clocks, loneliness and this blank page where my fingers move. And then the thought fox, which is his creative impulse, sort of creeps into his brain. I think it's one of the most beautiful poems about the creative act ever written. So
you've just flashed me right back to Dapdale High School.
I've had a very strong
image of studying.
Maybe it should be the thought greyhound.
Well, we're joined now by two of the artists whose works featured in the exhibition. Black Douglas, hello.
Good morning.
And Michelle Boon-Prasset, hello.
Hello.
Now, Michelle, not all animals in the city are equally loved. Some people, like Tom Lehrer, might want to poison those damn pigeons. But you've created ceramics of pigeons and ibises. What did you see in them?
I think because in my practice I reference a lot of memories of growing up in southwestern Sydney and being a child of migrant parents. I guess there's like, I don't know, it's not always the best place to live in terms of being like growing up in housing commission. So I think as I get older, I try and look for things that help me process those memories, and I kind of find a solidarity in those, like, birds that people find disgusting and call them rats of the sky or bin chickens, because that's kind of, yeah, like when growing up, people, if they found out you were from the West, they were kind of like, oh, you're a Westie, or oh, you're a Hauser. So, yeah, I think that's why I like them, because they're these tragic figures that kind of people see or are apathetic to or disgusted by, but they're there and I think they're quite interesting. I have like a few like happy memories if I think about them, because when I was approached to make work for the show, I thought about when I was young and we used to go into the city and it was like this big family trip. We'd get ready, we'd have like our lunch packed and our shoes, our sports shoes so we wouldn't get tired, and we'd go to the Sydney Harbour area and yeah, we'd kind of pretend like we were tourists, and have this really happy memory of my dad sitting down and a pigeon doing a little poop on his hand. And he was like this man who I always grew up thinking he was Lao Elvis and wonderful and perfect. And then, yeah, he got crapped on. And instead of kind of being like this awful memory, it turned into this like the really happy memory where he went to wash his hand and he found some money and then treated us to like a milkshake and a spaghetti. Yeah, so I kind of like that memory from something disgusting and maybe something repellent, something happy.
And something a bit cheeky. There's something about those birds. And it's like seagulls as well. They, you know, I'm sure we've all had some at seagull trying to nick one of our chips. But Black Douglas, I can't I have to go straight to this beautiful object that's here. Literally, it's here on the desk with me. It's a fruit bat. Now, some people also have a similar response to what Michelle was talking about with pigeons. Some people don't like the bats that are so much a part of Sydney. I mean, what do those bats mean to you?
Good question, and a very layered one at that, because this whole concept of making these resin and bronze and gold-plated bats stemmed from being involved in that the concert that was held at Hyde Park when they were talking of eradicating them from the Botanic Gardens with industrial noise.
Why did they want to get rid of them? Remind us.
Because they basically stink the place out and eat everything in sight when the other food sources run out. So like you see with the Corellas, galahs and cockatoos coming in droves from the west because the food supplies are shortened. Due to that horrible term that people are opposing, climate change. So too with the bats migrating in greater numbers, and they decided to eradicate them. So I was part of a concert that was opposing that. And the fact that when you look deeper into it, these bats before you are called Wirrumbai, which is the Darug Aboriginal term for the male totem. It's a dominant male totem for the Aboriginal people of Western Sydney. And so we've got this amazing a mammal that's been coming here for thousands of years to the same place, and all of a sudden mankind in Sydney wants to protect a few ornate flowers in the Botanic Gardens, so we move them on.
So how did you make this? I mean, I can't resist touching it, and one of the things I keep wanting to do is putting my fingers into its little feet, because you can just see how it would have hung on a tree. It also made me think of Lynn Onus's artwork where he had bats hanging off a hill's hoist. But how did you make this little sculpture that's here on the desk right next to me?
Well, the difference between this and the Lynn Onus, which some people have likened it to, is that I actually found a recently deceased bat on my morning walk in Redfern and near Cleveland Street, and it was just too handsome to just let rot away and the ants get to it. So I picked him straight up and put him into, are you ready for it, a fruit box. And I took him up to my place and put him straight in the freezer. And I tracked down a masterful mold maker from Marrickville, Claire Tennant, and she helped me produce this into an edition of resin molded bats. And then she said, you know what, you can do anything with these things. You can plate them in anything. I said, can you do it in gold? Yep, so you've got an 18-carat gold-plated one before you.
And I should add a bit of a public health warning there. People have to be really careful of touching actual bats, don't they? Because they do have the Lyssa virus, which can be really dangerous if it actually scratches you. But this is a safe bat. I'm quite happy to touch this beautiful bat. Now, Michelle, you talked about the sort of the tragedy that you see in these birds in the city. But by making them into artworks, are you celebrating them?
I think, yeah, in a way, I'm kind of getting people to look at them. I think it's easy to kind of be apathetic towards things that you see every day. So I'm putting it, going through the process of making it, and I find that ceramics is quite flawed. There's all these things that can happen. Things can crack and break. And I don't know if anyone's like made ceramics. It can be quite disappointing and you're not quite sure what kind of you end up with. So it's kind of like my approach to making is it's like processing memories and processing trauma and kind of looking at things in a different way. So I think when I feel like it adds value. So looking at birds and pigeons and ibises and things that people might not necessarily be drawn to, it's putting it on a platform where they can kind of see it and be like, oh, that's a bit funny, or yeah, that's still gross, but it's still kind of just really looking at it as opposed to not thinking about it at all.
There's a lot of playfulness in the work that you've done. I've seen pictures of the animals you make. But, Glenn, I'm wondering what other types of animals are celebrated in your exhibition?
Well, it's a funny question because I'm just sort of sitting here thinking about it. I think all of the artists which we have chosen, so Mylin Nguyen and Gary Trinh, who are the other two artists, have also chosen in some instances to focus on those animals that we are sort of repelled by or we don't think about too deeply. So Mylin, for instance, has made an installation which consists of koi carp sort of swimming through the city. And carp is one of those things that to some cultures, you know, it is really a problematic fish, whereas to some other cultures it's sort of something to be prized. So she's looking at koi.
So she could have chosen eels, those eels that wiggle through Centennial Park.
Yeah, but that's quite magical. That whole thing about the eels is quite great. We didn't really touch upon that. But the other thing is we just sort of started to dig through ideas is we went to the Mounted Police Museum as well, which is in Surry Hills, and they've got amazing material about the horses that they work with, and they have their own museum. It's quite a popular spot. So we wanted to sort of draw out those cities, those sort of poetic stories that exist in the city where people coexist with animals in really beautiful ways.
And, of course, the thing about bats too is that they swoop through the city sometimes in quite surprising ways, and occasionally, of course, they get zapped by electricity. But you've also done stuff on birds of prey in Sydney, which is, again, not something people might think of, but I know I've seen hawks and all sorts of things around the city.
Yeah, from my understanding of it, and people may call in and want to discuss this, is that some raptors and eagles and birds of prey have moved into the city because they use the wind currents in the building. And there's an incredible piece of footage, which is quite gruesome, but is in the exhibition, of a raptor actually chased a pigeon into a window. It's probably worked out it can actually kill the pigeons that way. Was a window that was in a bank, so a banker made a incredible film that's on YouTube of the raptor sort of slowly eating the pigeon over a few days, which is maybe has some sort of resonance with the banking system.
Who could possibly say that? I wouldn't editorialise on that one. So you're talking about something that's both beautiful and also brutal, I guess, which is part of what thinking about nature and animals and the cities does. Black, what did you want to do? What did you want to make people think about by confronting them with not just a bat, but in fact it's a dead bat?
Very important question. The fact that these little fellows, who are a dominant spiritual totem for many Aboriginal peoples on this continent, is just kind of falling victim to 90,000 volts going through its little body, and just as it's trying to navigate through the city. And so the main purpose of making this into an iconic sculpture was that it needs to be immortalized, in the sense that in the same way that we immortalize in recent subjects in the news, the great colonizers of this continent. So in every major park, you've got the colonizers in bronze statues. And we have very few Aboriginal representation statues, let alone beautiful creatures like this. So the first one out of the progressing from the resin was a bronze one, and I always wanted to make something in bronze, so that's my first foray into that. And why not immortalize this amazing mammal in bronze, and so I can kind of hang off the cookie's head or something in the park.
So, Michelle, do you feel like these animals are sort of totemic or spiritual for you as you're rethinking your relationship to things like pigeons?
Oh, I don't think I would say that. I think I just, my approach is to think because I grew up in a hyper strict religion, there was always these extremes of either being perfect and good or the other extreme where everything was like bad and wrong. So as I've gotten older and I've left that organization, I think I'm just trying to see the gray areas in life, and I think that they can be just as beautiful, and I'm not looking for purity, or I'm not looking for the beauty in everything, but just a different understanding and acceptance of things.
So, Glenn, in the minute we've got left, can you see an exhibition like this moving through all the cities in Australia? Because when I think about it, there are other types of animals, you know, so the animals of Darwin or Brisbane are very different to the animals of Sydney.
Yeah, definitely. I think you could do this show sort of anywhere. And one of the things that sort of drew us to the idea was this thing that people think, yeah, that they are in control, but if we were to leave, the animals couldn't care less. I think they'd just be like, they'd just take over, would be the natural thing to do. So imagine every city in Australia taken over by animals is quite compelling thought.
So hopefully it'd be a story of geckos and black swans rather than of cockroaches. Yeah. So thanks for joining me today, the artist Black Douglas and Michelle Boonprosset and Glenn Barclay, curator. Something Else is Alive, Sydney and the Animal Instinct is on at Customs House at Circular Quay in Sydney until February 2018. So you've got plenty of time to get to that.